This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the show. We are brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. Thank you to them for sponsoring the show. Thank you to you for joining the show. And thank you to my guest, Morten Jensen, for joining me on this podcast. Mort, it has been a while, but I'm glad to have you back, mate. How's things?
It's going well. Thank you for having me back, first and foremost. But it's going well outside of, you know, coronavirus cases spiking again worldwide and also here in Denmark.
Yeah,
so
not ideal.
Got to be a little bit extra careful there. So wear your masks, people. But outside of that, it's going well. Thank you. I hope the same for your end.
Yeah, it's not too bad, mate. We're still in lockdown here, but hopefully exiting soon. But who the hell knows? Things can change in this space pretty damn quickly. But you know, you're just getting used to it at this point, I suppose. 2020 is essentially a write-off. We're in September now, and the nonsense continues to ensue. But so long as we're all happy, healthy, safe, that's probably the main thing. But it's been a while since we've talked. Obviously, we got you back on Talk Bulls Basketball, but specifically to maybe take a look towards the draft. I haven't necessarily had much of a chance at this point, rather, to talk about the draft itself or going into details. I've mentioned it here and there, and obviously the fact that it's something that's probably the first milestone for our tourist kind of service and his new management group as to their first big thing that they need to do with him at the helm at the moment. But the draft was meant to be, well, it was meant to be happening in the mid-October, but now it's been pushed back to about November 18th. Maybe it's going to get pushed back again. Who the hell knows? But that essentially gives us more time to talk about this draft, which is good for me because I need to still do some more homework, but I know you've definitely done a lot more than I have. So hence why I wanted to get you on to talk draft, but maybe to talk more philosophically and more high level about this specific draft and what the Bulls' approach should be at this draft, how they should handle it from a strategic standpoint, if this draft really, you know, is going to change the perception of this Bulls rebuild. Those are the sorts of things that I want to get into. We can also obviously talk about the prospects at large, but also go into to Bulls coaching as well. Obviously, that's what I mentioned, the draft, actually. The Bulls coaching search is going to be our kind of Chauvis's first port of call. But there are the things I wanted to discuss today. As you've done more work on the draft than I have, you are the best person to have this conversation with. But let's start with the general approach of the draft and how you think the Bulls should be heading into this specific draft in terms of, should they be thinking best player available? Should they be thinking about position? What should they be considering? What should they be avoiding? Those sorts of things. You know, let's start there at least.
I'm always a big proponent of going best player available in the draft. I think when you're plucking holes, that should be done in free agency. I think those two are pretty set. Like, you go for upside in the draft, and if you need something specific, you can fill that out in free agency. So always BPA for me. I think for the Bulls, they need to just figure out like how to put these specific guys in tiers, because this draft is going to be crazy. There's no real consensus about where, you know, certain players are going to land. You can realistically say that a guy who is projected like seventh in a mock draft could go in the late 20s. Like, everything is up in the air. I kind of want to go back a little bit to what Ricky O'Donnell used to say. Like, he always said that even if you might have to reach a little bit, you know, if you like a certain guy, go get him. Just take him. Even if you have to take him a little bit higher, if you like someone, get him. Now, usually I would slightly disagree with him, depending on, you know, the scale. Like, if you have the fourth pick and you liked someone who was projected to go in the 14-15 range, I would always be a big proponent of just basically saying, then trade down and see if you can get another asset out of such a deal, like maybe another draft pick or a young player or something else that you can add to the treasure trove. This year, however, I'm all in on Ricky's logic because, again, this draft is more so of a crapshoot than anything else. We simply have not had a whole lot of data on a lot of these guys. There are a lot of weird players who really don't have this one bankable skill. So if you like someone, you just completely disregard, especially this draft, where they're slotted because in terms of the mock draft. Just take who you like, even if you have to reach significantly, because everything is up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's all fair. It was sort of a leading question to a degree as to, you know, the Bulls' approach, which whether it should be best player or not, or whether they should just, you know, look at it from a positional sense. And I guess the reason why I asked the question is because I'm sort of weighing it up in my head. I know typically I would agree and would say the Bulls' roster at this point of the rebuild just, you know, obviously is clearly nowhere near complete. They just need an infusion of talent, and typically you take the best player available. But I'm just wondering, in this day and age, if the best player available was a traditional four or a traditional center, would you take that player as the best player available?
Yeah, no, I actually wouldn't. So I'm one of those guys who believe that it's actually the power forward position that has died, not the center position. You know, for years we all said that the center has died. I think the center is alive and well. They just have to be of a certain caliber, and they need to be a defensive-oriented mindset. So the center position has changed, but it's still there. It's the power forward position to me that's just dead and buried, which is also why I am way more concerned about Lauri Markkanen moving forward than I was, say, a year ago.
Yeah.
So, no, I wouldn't. And there's another component that I think we kind of forget as an NBA community when we discuss big men in the draft, and that is big men have gotten insanely cheap in free agency. You know, I like to pick up this example a lot. Rashawn Holmes signed with the Kings last season or last summer for 2 years, $9.7 million, I want to say. And he turned into a very, very dependable, you know, starting center, over 12 points a game, over 8 rebounds, shot over 60% from the field. I think hit 80% from the line. He was an active defensively as well. So if you can find and identify those players in free agency, and you can actually get a center who is sort of starting caliber worthy for that amount of money, I simply wouldn't go out and spend a draft pick on a big guy. I just wouldn't. Then I would prioritize players who have more future contractual value and more trade value. I would actually go for wings, because right now the name of the game is wings. If you have a wing who can handle the basketball, who can play both sides of the ball, and who can rebound a little bit and preferably shoot as well, that's the key swing skill here. That's got to be the one that you have to prioritize. And I would also argue that we have to define, when we say best player available, it also comes down to how do we define best? Do we talk about who is most influential, or just like who has the best skills? Because if we go by best skills, I would argue that a power forward center like Onyeka Okongwu from LSU, or USC, sorry, is right up there in terms of skills. But if we're talking about influence, like Devin Vassell from Florida State, right there should probably be the more influential player from day one. So it boils down to your preference and how you kind of break down the word best.
Yeah, and look, Okongwu is a perfect example, because I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being, you know, one of the top five players in this draft. But obviously the Bulls hold the number four pick. They've got their power forward in Markkanen, and they've got their center in Wendell Carter now. That isn't to say those two players are cemented into those positions for the next 10 years or anything of that nature. Clearly, this is all a fluid situation. But guys like Okongwu, Obi Toppin, James Wiseman, not to say that they are the best player available at number four, but assuming for whatever reason, Karnaschovas was to think that they were, given that they play a position that the Bulls don't necessarily need, and maybe that specific position, more so power forward than center, is less relevant, let's say, or easier to fill through other needs, whether it's through free agency or trade. That's why I was just wondering, in this day and age, particularly around big men, if this whole best player available principle has as much merit as what it did in the past. I certainly, I obviously believed in that previously, and maybe it's a counterfactual. I mean, because if you are a big guy, if you play a position that is less relevant, or you can find so frequently elsewhere, then maybe that automatically discounts you from being that best player available. I don't know the answer to it, but these are just the thoughts that I've just been going back and forward, in my own mind. But I just keep coming back to the fact that this Bulls draft needs to be about need, and I know that, it's a bit of a challenging thought for me, particularly in the past, because I have always gone BPA, but they just need wings at this point. They need some on-ball creation, and that may coincide with who is BPA, but yeah, it's just an interesting conversation, just in case that BPA player is not a wing or not a guard for whatever reason. It's just an interesting thought exercise, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think it boils down to you have to be locked into how the NBA is operating. We knew that guard packs wasn't really progressive in that sense. They weren't looking ahead. Now it seems like, Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley are those kind of people. So I have to assume that the Bulls are thinking differently in the draft this time around. And I would be shocked. Let me put it this way. I'd be absolutely floored if they weren't looking at wings, with an increased level of interest.
Yeah, look, I would be extremely concerned if that wasn't the case, given the gaping hole that the Bulls have on the wing, but particularly when we watch these playoffs at the moment and the fact that teams are running multiple wings on the court at one time. It's not enough to have two or three wings on your roster. You have to have two or three wings that you could play almost at the same time. So it is a concern for the Bulls. They need to be looking at wings, but obviously there's more holes in that. They have a lot of, issues, let's say, with on-ball creation. I know Zach LaVine has sort of emerged as an elite offensive finisher, and Kobe White showed flashes as being someone that can potentially be a very competent, isolation scorer, someone who can grab a bucket for themselves as well. But on-ball creation for others, that is still problematic for the Bulls, particularly if they do intend to keep rebuilding around Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter, two players who will, always be highly assisted players. They need someone to feed them the ball. They need someone to create the basket. They'll create baskets for them, so to speak. So that is also a concern for me as to, if they do fill the hole with a wing, if they do grab a wing, let's say, whoever that may be, whether it's, Devin Vassell, Danny Avdija, or whoever that wing may be, I mean, that would be nice. It obviously fills a potential hole, hopefully, assuming that player turns out to be a reasonable player, but you've still got major issues elsewhere. So in terms of the type of player they should be prioritizing, are you sort of thinking more wing sort of player, more on-ball sort of creator? Because at the moment, there doesn't seem to be a player at number four available to the Bulls that sort of checks multiple boxes at least.
Right. It is really, it comes down to which player do you think is closer in range that fills one of those needs. It has to be, I'm just going to go position now instead of just wing, because when we say wing, it's primarily a small forward we're talking about here, because theoretically, Zach LaVine is a wing, but he's not that kind of wing. We're talking about like the legit small forward who can sort of play multiple positions, who can slide between the two, the three, and maybe even the four, because it's that kind of versatility that we're looking for in today's game. Case in point, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, those two can effectively play three positions, and that's the type of player you're looking for. Is that player in this draft? Right now, it doesn't appear that way, but given that the Bulls are drafting third, if by some miracle, and I don't think it's going to happen, LaMelo Ball drops, I think he's the guy you need to key in on, because then you get the playmaker. He's the guy in this draft who has that one clear-cut bankable skill, and that is to get others involved. His court vision is absolutely fantastic. And the way that he moves on the court, he's got very loose hips. He's very fluid in his motions. That allows him to actually make a lot of different passes that we haven't even seen yet, because he can deliver that ball at full speed. And when he's crossing the court and like he's, doing his crossovers, getting into the lane, he's got his head on a swivel. And because he's got those very flexible hips, it allows him to turn in midair or very quickly while on the floor in either direction. So he can throw those passes really, really quickly and very, very accurately. And that is going to enhance the game of Zach LaVine. It's going to enhance the game of Kobe White, because those guys can shoot the ball, and Lauri Markkanen as well. So that guy would come in and immediately solve the Bulls' playmaking issues. Now, granted, he's not a strong defender, so that would be problematic because you would have Levine, yeah, Kobe White, and then LaMelo Ball, you know, three guards essentially who can't defend. That's an issue that you have to figure out for another day. At the very least, you get the playmaking done. But if the Bulls were to trade down a little bit, you know, the options for the wing position becomes a lot more intriguing. We mentioned Vassell, there's Aaron Nesmith, there's Sadiq Bey. You know, there are a lot of guys who can fill out that wing position. So maybe that is in their interest. And we know that Boston is looking to trade away some of their, I think it's three first round draft picks that they have. Maybe there's something in that. And I even forgot to mention Isaac Okoro as well.
Yeah, it's funny in a twisted way, and to that point, and you just sort of mentioned there that maybe the Bulls potentially could talk about trading down, and I definitely want to get into that aspect as to what they should be doing with the number four pick. But in a cruel, twisted way, the Bulls move up in the draft. They jump up to number four, but in some ways, in this specific draft, it would have been actually ideal to maybe stay at number seven or be in that number eight range, somewhere in that specific range, let's say, because I'm almost intrigued more by the players that are in that range and maybe feel a little bit more confident and comfortable with the players in that range, at least being floor raisers, let's say. Whereas now I kind of feel like the Bulls are sort of just out of a sort of reaching point of, you know, the likes of someone like LaMelo Ball. I don't know how you feel about Anthony Edwards. I'm not too high on him, but still, I mean, he's obviously, you know, a guy that's probably going to go one or two in this draft. So they're just outside those top couple picks. But then they're sort of stuck in that mid-range where, yeah, you'd be happy with a lot of the players maybe that they would take at number four, but how good you feel about it, who the hell knows? Whereas if you're at number seven, you wouldn't necessarily have to think about that or consider about that or feel that way, I suppose. It would have been nice, I guess, if they jumped up to number four in another draft, maybe in 2017 or 18 or even 19, maybe less so in this specific draft. But in terms of what they should do with pick number four, do you think they should stay pat, pick someone at number four, whether it's Killian Hayes, you know, that on-ball creator that maybe can break out to be that sort of star on-ball creator, or do they take a wing like Vassell or someone like that, or do they trade up, do they trade down, do they even trade out of the draft? You know, what would you do at number four if you were Connor Shovis?
All right, well, so this is just me, and I've mentioned this to you before. You are not quite sold on this idea, I know, but this is just me. I am in love with Troy Brown Jr. from Washington. I think he is just outstanding, and he solves so many things. He's a wing, but he's also got great playmaking capabilities. He's an improving shooter. He's actually become quite a good defender, and he's already an elite rebounder for his position. I have him as my most improved player pick for next season. And if Washington was so inclined to trade him for number four, I actually would go that route, even if he does have 2 years less on his rookie deal. So financially, it would, you know, hurt the Bulls in the end. But I would go that route. If it was up to me and that trade was on the table, that's what I would do. That would be number one for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not opposed to Brown, the player, so to speak. I think he's an interesting prospect who certainly developed and became a better player this season. I don't know how many Bulls fans actually watched Wizards basketball, watched Troy Brown, and why the hell would you? I mean, they were just as bad as the Bulls, really. So why would you want to double your pain in that sense? But I get, yeah, my main issue with it is, one, I don't see Brown being a star-level player, and two, he's already played 2 years in the league, so the time on his rookie contract is already... It is already ticking. I mean, he's halfway through it sort of thing. So in that sense, he'd be on a similar timeline from Wendell in terms of, you know, an extension at a similar time. Obviously, the Bulls have got to think about that in a year's time with Lauri Markkanen. I mean, they can already give an extension to Lauri now, but if not now, then at least in a year's time. So that's my main two reservations about doing a deal like that, where you're probably trading for a good player, someone who probably doesn't have star upside, and you're going to have to maybe pay in 2 years' time. And there's a real good chance that maybe the Bulls don't get anyone better at Troy Brown at number four, but I kind of would still want to take that chance at maybe Killian Hayes breaking out into that star or being at least a better player than Troy Brown. You know, that's just me personally. I certainly understand your reasoning for it, and I guess just mentally, I always just... I always have a wall about trading out of the draft just because when you sort of land a number four pick or you've got a high lottery pick, and I think it's more to do with the sunk cost of going through 8-9 months of a terrible season and the only saving grace being a nice, juicy lottery pick, and to sort of trade that away for a player that maybe, you know, would be a good player but maybe doesn't have that star appeal. I guess it's probably more that... That's probably more my issue with it, I suppose. The fact that I've had to sit through 10 months of bad Bulls basketball, looking forward to the draft, looking forward to hopefully drafting a star, and then just to turn that into a good player. I don't know. It's there's less sex appeal about it, I suppose.
No, I get that. I completely get that. And your reasonings are very valid. It's because I just have this is, again, it's personal preference for me. I just love Troy Brown Jr. I think he's going to be one hell of a starter in this league. Now, you said he might not be a star, and I think I could agree with that. There is definitely that world wherein he doesn't become a star. I do think there is also a world wherein he does become a star. But I agree with you that so far, the odds are that he's just going to be a very, very good starter, and maybe that's it. Which, is fine in a nutshell, but... You're right. There is that opportunity when you're playing the draft, you're just going to hit a home run. Now, in this draft in particular, that's probably a little bit more of a harder sell, which is why I'm way more open to it. But I agree with you that is the appeal of going through a very tough season. It is to have that juicy draft pick, as you described it, because you never know what that can turn into. What if you get a franchise player? What if you get someone who can lead you to the promised land in a couple of years? I completely get that romanticism about the draft. I love the draft, so I completely get it. And that is why, ironically, I think it's so funny that we as an NBA community have this tendency of basically ignoring Anthony Edwards. I know that his shot profile was horrible in college, but when you look at his physicality and when you look at the upside that he has on both ends of the court, he's probably the one guy I would argue that could become a superstar if he got his head on right and if he took more mature decisions. Granted, when you have players who don't really possess a high level of basketball IQ, there is a cap on that ceiling. But there's always this idea that, maybe he was just cruising in college because he was waiting to go to the NBA. That's why he just took a lot of pull-up threes. He didn't really care, a la Ben Simmons a little bit. Now, I don't know if that's true. That's just a theory that's going around a little bit. But if you want someone with severe upside who could become that guy for you, I think it's Edwards.
Well, and that brings me back to that situation of, is four the wrong spot to be in almost, because you're just outside of the range for LaMelo and Edwards. I mean, they're going to probably only go number one and two. Who the hell knows goes three, and then the Bulls are obviously left at four. I mean, the ultimate worst case for the Bulls is, LaMelo goes one, let's say, Edwards goes two, and maybe Killian Hayes goes three. And then you're sort of left with a bunch of wings, James Wiseman, Okongwu, these sorts of guys, Obi Toppin. So in that sense, that on-ball creator, if those guys go 1, 2, 3, which I think is a possibility, then all of a sudden number four becomes even less appealing than what it is. So it's an interesting situation. I want to talk about whether Bulls should trade up or trade down. But before we do that, let's tell our listeners about this week's sponsors. First up, let me tell you about Indeed. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You had to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30. I also want to tell you all about Bet Online. Folks, the wait is finally over. Football is officially back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to Bet Online today and take full advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, back to the podcast and back to speaking about the number four pick. We were talking more about what the Bulls should do. We've sort of discussed loosely there your idea of maybe trading out of the draft and trading a number four pick for a player like Troy Brown. But, it, you know, what scope do the Bulls have to do? What scope do the Bulls have in terms of trading up or even trading down? What's more likely? What represents best value in your opinion? And how would you approach the draft from that standpoint if they are staying in it but maybe not necessarily wanting to stay at number four? What do you think is more likely and what do you think is the best solution?
Well, every team seems to be wanting to trade down. So it was no secret that Minnesota, who won number one, were not exactly thrilled because no team wanted number one actively. It was sort of a hot potato thing. Everyone wanted to avoid number one because there's always a lot of pressure on picking the number one right. And in this draft, there's a high bust risk for a lot of players. So it wasn't that appealing to win this lottery. And virtually every team in the lottery have been discussing in some level or not, or at least be rumored to be discussing trading both out of the draft or down of the draft. So if the Bulls add themselves to that list of teams going, well, we want to trade down, there's a lot of competition there. So you could ask the question, if so many teams are interested in trading down, could you get a haul if you wanted to trade up? Like, could you get a good deal in that sense?
Yeah.
Would you have to pay less to trade up because teams are desperate to trade down? Maybe, but then you have to trade up to at least two so you get one of Edwards and Ball, and preferably Ball because, you know, he solves that issue for you and he has that one bankable skill that we've talked about. Is that in the cards? I don't know. Like, if it was me personally, I too would prefer to trade down, and that's because every team is seeing what you and I are discussing, that there are a lot of intriguing options later down on the draft board. Where it's somewhat more okay to whiff on a guy potentially. So there's not going to be that stigma around the organization that, oh, you're bad at drafting because this is really a crapshoot draft. And if you flunk on a guy at 14 or 15, you know, it's not the end of the world. But if you draft up or trade up and you get someone in at 2 or 1 or 3 where, you know, that guy doesn't pan out and he becomes a bust, that's going to haunt you for a long time. So, again, I get the appeal of trading down, and I would too. I mean, Boston with the 3 first rounders, very appealing option. I don't know if they would be willing to trade up at all. They seem to be interested in trading out of the draft. They also have quite a lot of young guys on their roster already. But if you could swing a deal for 14, they have 26 and 30. I don't know if you can get all 3, maybe 2 of them, but I would definitely do that if that was on the table.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I'm kind of hoping like a team like the Knicks just do very Knicks-y type things where they would be interested in trading up for 4 and trading out of 8, let's say, and they give you a future first round pick. Now, I would definitely not do that if I was them, because a future first round pick to jump off 4 places in this draft is kind of dumb. But I'm sort of hoping the Knicks are very dumb and would do something like that. So if the Bulls can sort of slide down maybe 4 places, get their hands on a Devin Vassell or an Isaac Okoro at number 8 whilst picking up a future pick from the Knicks, that would be nice. I'm hopeful that the Knicks remain dumb. Obviously, they got new management in there, so maybe they're not as silly as what they've been in the past. But that's probably what it would take for me to trade down. Trading up, whilst there might be a lot of teams willing to sell, particularly the Warriors, I mean, they're probably the most likely to sell that number 2 pick. I'd imagine they'd be wanting to package it up with a few other assets, maybe Andrew Wiggins' contract, and try to get in another star to come back with Curry, Thompson, and obviously Draymond. So I would assume that number pick 2 is probably the most likely one to get dealt. But, I mean, for the Bulls to move up two places? Is there enough delta between someone like Killian Hayes and LaMelo Ball for the Bulls to sort of jump up from 2 to 4, plus giving up an additional asset? To your point, obviously a lot of teams may be willing to trade down, so maybe that limits or reduces the value of what you need to sort of include with number 4 pick to jump up with number 2. But even then, I mean, is there enough of a delta between Killian Hayes and LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards to make that leap up to number 2? Do you think that even makes sense in that way?
Well, no. See, it depends on the asset that I would be giving up from the Bulls. That really what boils down to it. If Killian Hayes is there at 4, you know, sure, you can go, you can take him and you can run with him, and you can say, you know, he's a lesser player than LaMelo Ball, but if his value outweighs what you would eventually give up as the additional asset, you go with him. I will say as much about Killian Hayes, because I know NBA Draft Twitter is high on him, and that's fair. He's got a lot of in his game that I also like, but he broke out because he actually made the move to Germany. So he played in France before. There were some issues contractually and with the team, and then he simply just bailed out and said, you know what, I'm going to Germany instead. It is far more, it's far easier succeeding in Germany than in France. So the French league is the second most athletic league in the world, even more so than the ACB league. The French league just loves athletes and especially guys with lots of athleticism and speed. And he wasn't really up to par there. In Germany, which is a very slowed-down league, he's doing a lot of good work, but you also have to wonder, how is he going to adapt to the NBA, which is by far the most athletic league in the world? So there is a part of me that's a little bit skeptical about him as an NBA prospect, at least right now, and how he'll play from years 1 to 2. I think ultimately he's going to be a fine NBA player, but I think the adjustment period is going to take some time. So that's one of the things that I also have in the back of my mind. Plus the fact that I don't know if he's like a natural playmaker for others specifically, whereas Ball, that problem just gets solved. Like, you know, you're getting a guy who can score, who can rebound, who can give you assists. You are getting that at the bare minimum. Now, what you don't know is the defense and the shooting percentages, which are pretty huge as well.
Yeah,
I would probably go with Hayes if the asset that the clubs are demanding is, you know, Kobe White, for example. I wouldn't give up Kobe White to move up two pieces. You know.
Yeah, look, I kind of feel the same. And even Lauri Markkanen, who I'm kind of down on at this point, I wouldn't even include him with number 4 to move up for number 2. It just feels like the Bulls players that may be appealing to another team to sort of trade up are worth more than that 2-spot leap. Maybe if the Bulls were sort of at 7 and trying to get up to 2, then maybe I'd be more willing to part with one of those quote-unquote members of the core. But at this point, I just don't think there is that enough of a delta between Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball or whoever it might be, between Killian Hayes and, you know, Denny or Isaac Okoro or whoever the hell the Bulls sort of target at number 4. I just don't know if that's worth the risk to trade up in that sense. I'm probably more inclined to trade down, but to your point, it seems like so many teams are willing to trade down that those options just may not be available. So it's an interesting situation. I guess the way I'm sort of rounding out my own thoughts to this specific draft, and you mentioned it there, the draft Twitter and even Bulls Twitter, a lot of them are pretty high on Killian Hayes. A lot of them are high on Denny as well, thinking that he's not exactly a Luka clone, let's say, but a version of him. And I obviously don't think that's the case. But a lot of Bulls fans, as is typically the case around this stage, think that we're going to find a player that has a legitimate shot at stardom at number 4. Whereas me, the more I look at this draft, the more I'm thinking it's probably more likely that whoever they take at number 4 will be an interesting prospect, an appealing prospect, but probably most likely their best case scenario is being a high-end role player or something like of that nature. Because any player you sort of identify at number 4, the chances are of them reaching stardom is pretty low, because all of these guys seemingly have some sort of major issue within their game that may prevent them from reaching that level, which is why I'm sort of projecting most of these guys to being hopefully a high-end role player. But do you think any of the guys that are sort of potentially available at the Bulls at number 4 have a more than sort of 25% chance at being a star, or is even that too high?
that's too high, I think.
Yeah.
So I actually like Denny, to be completely frank with you. That I think he's Luka. I want to get that right out of the way immediately. Yeah. But I actually think that Denny is, and people are probably going to raise their eyebrows a little bit. I think he's somewhat of a safe pick. I think he's got a high floor. I don't necessarily know whether or not he's got a high ceiling. But the thing is, he's a jack of all trades, a master of none. But that whole jack of all trades is actually an asset for him, especially in this draft where, you know, the swings for each player's potential can vary wildly. Denny comes in with a pretty established game. Like, he's actually a pretty solid post defender. His shooting is right now average from the outside, but it's there. It's more so the free throw component that is worrisome. He can handle the ball well for someone 6'9". He's got a pretty nice passing package. Like, he can pass out of the post. He can pass on the perimeter. He can even pass when he's on a live dribble, just not as well in high speed. But given that he's not even 20 years old yet, you know, those skills can be refined. For him, it boils down to, can I add a little shake and bake in my dribble package? Can I become that consistent shooter? If those two questions are being answered, yes, I can, he could be that combo forward, like the 3-4 thing that could work in a new age Bulls lineup. I look at Denny as what an NBA power forward should be. A guy who can handle the ball, pass, initiate the offense, not as the primary option, but like a secondary or tertiary option. And Denny kind of fits that mold. I would not hate it. And I can also say that our conversation, which has lasted 35 minutes about all these potential scenarios, it's kind of moot because from what I'm hearing, if the draft was tonight and Denny would be available at 4, the Bulls would take him.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. Like, I'm okay with Denny if he becomes the Bulls' power forward. I know a lot of Bulls fans see Zach as the shooting guard. They see Kobe as point guard. They obviously see Lowry and Wendell as power forward and center. I've got my concerns about the Bulls rebuilding around two traditionally sized bigs who can't necessarily change or play multiple positions, let's say. So I'm less wedded to the idea of Lowry Markkanen. You sort of floated a bit at the top of this podcast that you have more concerns around him as well. But I kind of like the idea of building Denny up to be that power forward rather than slotting him in at small forward. Because if you do put him at small forward, I think that does take away some of the more appealing aspects of his game. And I'd rather getting away from the perimeter at this point and sort of having him not be a small forward or even a two guard in certain matchups. I'd rather him be that power forward. And in that sense, that makes someone like Lowry more expendable in my eyes. So a take that I've been working on in the background is if you can sort of move someone like Lowry Markkanen for a pick in this draft in this sort of 6-8 range, and you can get your hands on Denny at 4 and maybe land a Okoro or Devin Vassell at 7, let's say, or 8, I'd be inclined to do that. And then that way you can sort of have Denny build up to be your power forward. You can have a Okoro be your small forward of the future, let's say. Put those two guys next to Levine and Kobe White. I'm more into that lineup than having Lowry at the 4. And I'm okay in drafting Denny at number 4 if you sort of project him to be that power forward of the future, let's say, rather than the small forward. But obviously that's thinking way down in advance. But that's probably where I differ with a lot of Bulls fans, but because I do see him as that combo forward, but ultimately as a power forward.
Well, I mean, you just ruined my Forbes article that I'm writing these days. That's, oh, really? That's intriguing. Yeah, because that's the exact same idea that I've been toying around with. So well, that's a home run hit right there. Yeah. No, I didn't mention
before this that I had been reading your emails and I had hacked into your emails and just reading your thoughts and all that sort of stuff. but we're on a similar wavelength, clearly.
We definitely are. Just as we were on the similar wavelength that Giannis should go to Dallas in 2021. So I like that.
Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, Bulls fans obviously want Giannis to come here. He's obviously not coming to Chicago, but he most definitely should go to Dallas. But look, I'm down with that idea about Denny at 4. If you can sort of move Markkanen for a small forward, I think that makes sense, whether it's a small forward within this draft, whether it's a, you know, Troy Brown Jr. or a small forward that's sort of existing within the NBA already. If you're taking, to me, someone who's, you know, can play that sort of 3-4, probably is more projectable as a four as the league continues to downsize. I mean, we've got to think about the league downsizing now at this point. We're just getting done watching the playoffs at this point where, you know, Boston and Toronto, they're not playing any, basically, any power forwards or center to close their lineups at this point. So if that's what's happening now in 2020, you just got to think about where the league's going to be in 2022, 2024, who the hell is going to be manning the power forward and the center positions at that point? And that's why I've got a lot of concern about Lowry at power forward. So that's why I think Denny at power forward is an interesting option rather than at small forward. And then if you can move Lowry for a wing in this draft or otherwise, then that's appealing to me. But look, there's a lot to play out. This whole thing will move a lot over the next couple of months. We've still got a lot of work, or at least I do, to sort of go into these specific prospects and to see how appealing they are. But I guess my overall takeaway at this point is whoever the Bulls take at number four, I'm probably going to have more questions than answers, and I'm not going to be over the moon about it. You know, I'll be quietly content, let's say, but not necessarily thrilled with how it is. And I won't necessarily see this pick as someone who's going to change the perception of this rebuild, at least, as we hit, you know, and maybe a number four pick in previous drafts would have, like a Jaren Jackson Jr. or something like that. So anyways, that's enough draft talk at this point. I wanted to talk about the Bulls coaching search, because whilst we haven't necessarily heard too much about the Bulls coaching search in you know, that it being the list of candidates being whittled down to a select few coaches that have reached out to about 10 guys or plan to reach out to 10 guys at this point, I guess the only addition that I wanted to, or the only addendum to the conversation that I wanted to discuss in terms of the Bulls coaching position since last time I got on the podcast was the fact that Billy Donovan parted ways with the OKC Thunder. He's entered the coaching market. Woj reported that the Bulls have an interest in potentially hiring or at least interviewing Billy Donovan. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Should the Bulls be pursuing Billy Donovan? Should they have an interview with him? And perhaps even further, if it progresses, should they be even thinking about Billy Donovan as their next coach?
Yeah, I think they should. The question is if there's interest from the other side, because Donovan didn't want to go through the rebuild in Oklahoma City. And I would argue the Bulls are very much in a rebuild. So I have to wonder if the interest level is even there. If he wants to compete now, and given that he's a former college coach, those guys have a tendency to really want to work with win now teams. I don't think the Bulls would be the right spot for him, because he'll be coming in and he'll be impatient and wanting to get this thing off the ground quickly, which could lead to a lot of disastrous roster decision, to be perfectly honest. But in the case that he comes in and is patient and says, okay, you know what? I just wanted a change of scenery. I'm still on board for a rebuild. Absolutely. I think what's most important is the Bulls find a coach who understands the reality of things. Like, yeah. I understand that the Bulls underperformed this season. They did. They are not a, you know, how much did they win? Was it 22, 23 games?
Yeah, something like that. I can't even remember at this point.
I can't, to be honest with you.
I've sort of tried to erase that from my mind.
Right. I mean, we have enough problems in 2020 to worry about the Bulls' win total. But even so, you know, the Bulls were somewhat projected to make the playoffs, but at maybe, you know, as some didn't, some did. And I think it's just important not to paint them as this surefire playoff team that it was only Jim Boylan who kept them back. Like, it's the problems go beyond that, of course.
100%.
Right. So, identifying a coach, you need to make sure that this person is patient, and he's got to focus on player development. You know, I'm not saying the Bulls should go out and hire Brett Brown, but, you know, what he went through in Philly in just in terms of player development was kind of positive. And you would kind of, if you were to hire him, you should know right off the bat that he's a point A to point B kind of coach, and that's sort of it. So it really depends on what you want to go. Do you want to find a coach who can possibly go the distance if the rebuild is successful? Or are you okay with hiring a coach that you know you need to replace 3 or 4 years down the road?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that's how I'm thinking about it. I'm not thinking about this next coaching hire being the next coach that raises up, you know, championship number 7 for the Bulls. I'm thinking about this, whoever this coach is, being the one that can extract the most value out of these young talent, whether it's the guys on this roster, guys that come through this roster in the next couple of years, whoever it is, Just give me the guy who is best at developing these players and maximizing these players, whether it's to get the most out of these players, to attract a free agent in 2 years' time, or to get the most out of these guys to make them appealing on the trade market, whatever the strategy may be. Just make sure this team, these players, just max out whatever their potential is. That's all I really care about at this point, which is why I'm probably leaning to Kenny Atkinson being my preferred hire at this point, because he's a more of a known quantity based on the you know, of all the coaches the Bulls have sort of identified, a lot of them are or would be first time head coaches, which is not it's not surprising based on how the Bulls have done things in the past. They typically hire rookie coaches, you know, assistants, highly regarded assistants from other teams. That's generally where their approach they've gone. Those sorts of guys are nice and cheap. You can sort of get them under your control. They're a little bit more malleable in that sense. They have less influence. Kenny Atkinson, really seemingly, and Billy Donovan at this point, maybe two. They're the only two guys that obviously have NBA coaching experience. We haven't necessarily seen Donovan develop players in the NBA. Obviously, he's gone into a situation where those players there have been more of a finished product in OKC. Obviously, with Durant and Westbrook previously, the Westbrook years, and now what we saw now with Chris Paul, obviously, and the team that he sort of had around Chris Paul in 2020 playoffs. So we haven't necessarily seen Billy Donovan develop talent in the NBA, but obviously he has all that experience developing players in college. So that's why Billy Donovan's appealing to me, because I believe he would be a coach that we at least have some semblance of an idea can develop a roster. Same thing with Kenny Atkinson, but I can't say that categorically that Dan Craig or Steven Silas or Wes Unseld Jr., these assistant coaches who come highly regarded from elsewhere, we obviously haven't seen them be NBA coaches. So can they make that leap to that coaching position? And, you know, when they do that, can they adequately develop talent at the same time? They're the questions I have. So I'm very much in on Billy Donovan potentially being the next Bulls coach. I'm very much in on Kenny Atkinson being the next Bulls coach, because I've seen those guys. I know what they can do. And this Bulls rebuild is kind of at a little bit of an interesting impasse at the moment where, yeah, it's a young roster. There's still a rebuild, but we're not long away from Zach LaVine needing a new deal. We're not long away from an extension from Larry Markkanen. Similarly for Wendell Carter, time goes pretty quickly. And whilst we like to think about this situation, you know, that we've got years upon years to sort of go with this rebuild, we really don't. So we need to extract the most value and the most potential out of these players as soon as we can. And that's why I'm intrigued, and why I was pleased to see Billy Donovan's name connected to the Bulls, because I think he is a good coach. Whether he's the next one that brings a title to Chicago, I don't care. I don't care at this point. Can he develop players? I have more faith in Donovan and Atkinson doing that than someone who's untested in the NBA, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I will say, you know, Darvin Ham should be on that list solely because Seth Partnow speaks highly of him, and I trust Seth's opinion more than anyone. Ham is one guy who just keeps being brought up in conversations around the league, it seems. Like, yeah. Every article is kind of pinpointing him specifically. Now, I don't know if we can point to Milwaukee's cast of characters outside of Giannis and go, look at all the improvements, because they simply don't have young guys. I mean, their youngest player right now is 23 years old, and their second youngest, Sterling Brown, is 25. So we just don't have that luxury of knowing how they develop young players. And I think that's, I think that's one of the concerns. So I agree with you that if Billy Donovan and Kenny Atkinson were interested, that's definitely a known commodity that you're bringing in. And also, I think Atkinson got a bum rap for being let go in Brooklyn, because obviously that was led a lot by Kyrie and KD. And when your players of that magnitude are taking decisions out of your, you know, hands, that's just going to muddy the waters a lot. And that's, you know, I think people are looking at Atkinson, oh, if you couldn't keep a job, why should we hire you for another position? And that's just wrong. That's not the way you should look at it. You should look at it as two players who basically took that decision, and that's it.
Yeah, like, I completely agree. There's some people that are completely out on Atkinson. They just look at his win-loss record and just assume he's a very bad coach, or, you know, at best an average coach or whatever it may be. And I just disagree with that completely. I think it's completely lacking the nuance or context to understand the situation. And if people want to write off Kenny Atkinson because of his record or whatever it might be, or because, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving didn't necessarily want him to stick around, then I think they're kind of missing the point, specifically with the Bulls situation. But yeah, maybe I would feel differently about it if the Bulls were sort of in year one of the rebuild. I have no doubt. Well, I shouldn't say no doubt, but I'm sure someone like Darvin Ham or Ime Udoka or Wes Unseld Jr., whoever it may be, the chances are probably pretty high that those guys come into a situation and end up being good NBA head coaches based on the amount of praise they're sort of receiving at this point. But from our vantage point, I just don't know. I don't know how I can make that judgment that these guys would be a success. And, you know, bringing it back to the Bulls situation, we're coming from a situation where our last two coaches have been novice coaches, let's say. They haven't coached in the NBA. And now that we're going into year four of the rebuild, it's just a critical time. And I would rather go with Kenny Atkinson or Billy Donovan at that point, because I just have more comfort around those guys getting the best out of these players than Darvin Ham or Wes Unseld Jr. That, like I said, those guys might end up being good, but I just don't want to take any risks at this point. So that's my thoughts on that. I'm pleased to see Donovan's in the conversation, whether he wants to be here or not. That's obviously a very good point. He may not want to be, and particularly if he's getting job offers from the Sixers or the Pelicans or whoever it may be, the Indiana Pacers. There's teams ahead of the Bulls that would probably help Donovan's win less record more so than the Bulls. So it's going to be an interesting situation, but it was noteworthy, so hence why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It is sort of important whether or not Billy Donovan actually wants to be in Chicago.
Yeah, for sure.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe the Bulls will just be forced into picking one of these first-time coaches. But we shall find out. I'm sure there'll be some updates on the coaching search in the next week or so. And when there is, we'll be back to go all over that news. But for now, Mort, that pretty much takes it out for this episode of the show. We've hit on the draft. I think it was a good primer as to more of a philosophical situation for the Bulls as to what they should be thinking about at number four, trading up, trading down, how appealing that pick necessarily is in the draft. And obviously, we just talked on Billy Donovan, etc. So I think we've covered it all in Bulls Nation at this point. I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a while that you've been on the show, but I'm glad we were able to do it again. But before you go, mate, tell the people where they can follow you online.
Yeah, well, thank you once again for having me. It's always a joy. Well, you can find me on Twitter at MSJNBA. I write for Forbes as well. And I just started a new YouTube channel called The NBA Show, which is a direct cousin, I want to say, to the podcast that I run with Brian Support called The NBA Podcast. Very creative names, I know, but I'm sticking to my very bland brand here. So check those out if you want to. Just put up a new video recently about, you know, the max contract and also about, you know, the whole greatest of all time debate. So yeah, go check those out.
Yes, definitely go do that. Subscribe to Morton's YouTube channel. Obviously, subscribe to his podcast. Follow him on Twitter so you can obviously get a hold of his latest articles and posts and those sorts of things, or just his general thoughts. Mort, thank you for coming on, mate.
Thank you for having me. Have a good one, Mark.
You too, mate. And Bulls fans, while you're at it, whilst you're searching for Mort online, you can find me on Twitter too, at MK Hoops. You can follow the show on Twitter too, at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to send me an email, do so. BullsHQPod@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord forum, send me an email. I will give you a link. You can join up and come be part of the conversation with a number of Bulls fans on there. We've got over 100 Bulls fans up in that Discord channel, talking Bulls 24/7. So if you want to be part of it, send me an email. But that just about does it on this episode of the show. We'll be back later again next week. Once we learn more about the Bulls coaching search, we'll be talking more draft in the weeks coming up as well. But that just about does it on this episode. Thank you for listening. Speak soon, Bulls fans.